You're listening to the Doc Lounge podcast. This is a place for candid healthcare conversations with physician recruitment industry's top executives and thought leaders. This podcast is made possible by Pacific Companies, your trusted advisor in physician recruitment. My name is Summer Gilbert, and I am the Director of Marketing and Branding here at Pacific Companies. Today on the podcast, we have Dr. Ryan Call. Ryan is a second-year GI fellow at St. John's Providence in Warren, Michigan. We're super excited to have Ryan on the podcast today. We're going to chat with him about why he chose GI, more about fellowship, tips for incoming fellows, and everything in between. So thank you so much, Ryan, for being here, and let's get started.
Today we have Dr. Ryan Call, second-year GI fellow, in the studio with us. Dr. Call, can you enlighten us as to maybe the main reason or reasons why you decided to go into medicine?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me. So as far as getting into medicine, you know, I think it's always something that was there for me. Even when I was a kid, you know, I remember wanting to hear other people's stories, help them with their problems. And, you know, I think a lot of people go into medicine because they want to help people. And being a physician and going into seemed to be the best way for me to do that. You know, there's a lot of kind of experiences and people along the way that led me to this. And, you know, in high school, I was lucky enough to be as part of a pre-health professions program that basically got me involved with a lot of the different parts of the hospital. And I got to see a lot of different specialties. And going through that experience, I knew this is what I wanted to do. And so I kind of focused everything I did in college and getting into pharmacy. I worked as a pharmacy technician for a long time to get an idea about medications and things like that, and volunteered a lot. And so all those things kind of culminated in me getting to med school and kind of where I'm at today.
Mm-hmm. And what was the impetus to get you to go into medicine versus maybe like a surgical specialty?
Sure. So, you know, initially as a medical student, you are exposed to it all. And so in the first 2 years, you do all your clinicals. And in the second 2 years, you go through a lot of rotations. And admittedly, I did not know exactly what I wanted to do initially. And so I thought, you know, maybe I wanted to do surgery, maybe I wanted to do medicine. And so I purposefully scheduled rotations at the beginning of my third year that would expose me to those fields. And so I did some surgical rotations and realized that I really liked the procedural aspect of surgery, but also like being on the wards and taking care of patients and seeing patients in the office and having that kind of mix. And so at that point, I decided that medicine and internal medicine was the best option for me because it gave me the opportunity to learn internal medicine, manage patients regularly, you know, as far as all their medical conditions inside and outside the hospital, and then give me the option to pursue a procedural specialty if, you know, if that seemed like the thing to do once I got exposed to it.
Is that why you didn't pursue a residency in family medicine?
In general, yes. You know, I really liked internal medicine, and I liked the idea of treating adults. You know, I had some pediatric rotations and taking care of the whole family. Well, very respected. Something that I had mentors that are family medicine physicians and really looked up to them. But for me specifically, I wanted to focus on adults and geriatric medicine. And so internal medicine was kind of the place for me.
Do you have any advice you could give to our listening audience about choosing a residency and then add on since you in a GI fellowship now, choosing a fellowship?
Sure. When you're looking at, you know, when you're looking at residency, I think the first thing you need to do, and this is one of the hardest things to do when you're a medical student, is make sure you're applying to what you love and want to do. And I think, unfortunately, for a lot of your medical career, you seem to make decisions without having a huge experience with that specialty. You know, you don't have a lot of experience on the wards or being in the office with patients when you're a medical student making the decision to apply to residency. And so it's really important that you make those connections during your rotations, talk to people, talk to the residents, talk to attendings, try to get those experiences so you know that what you're going into is what you're going to be happy with and what's a good fit for you. Above all, you want to make sure that you're doing something that allows you to impact people the way that you see yourself doing. And so when I was looking at residencies, I really discussed kind of day-to-day life with the resident and fellows. You want to make sure they're happy. Make sure that you're listening to them closely during the interviews and what they say, because they'll give you kind of hints if things could be improved and things that are really good about the program. Those residents and fellows are going to be your colleagues, and you're going to work with them day in, day out. You're going to have to depend on them, and you're going to learn from them. So you really want to make sure it's a good fit. One of the things that I was really kind of more surprised about was during my interviews, how important the program director is. So when I was doing interviews, some program directors you meet, this is going to be a great fit for me. The program director is, at the end of the day, they guide the program and they are your advocate. So you really want to make sure that you're going to have a good relationship with them, because it'll benefit you throughout your education and going into the future when you're applying for jobs and talking to networking and getting, kind of into your field and getting situated in your specialty.
So on that initial interview, was it just the program director you met with, or was there other attendings that you met in evaluating the programs?
Sure. In general, during the interviews, typically you'll meet at least, in most of my interviews, you met at least 2 to 3 faculty. And so that comprises, the program director. Usually there's an associate program director, and then clinical faculty. Some interviews were, one-on-one. Others were group interviews and kind of panels. You usually have interviews with the residents or fellows that are part of the program as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I know you're engaged to be married in the next year or so.
Yeah.
How did your fiance's, she's also a medicine GI, mm-hmm. how did her applications to the programs affect where you guys applied to?
So we're both very stubborn, and we knew what we wanted when we went into our training. And so we actually went to residency, our internal medicine residencies. We actually were at 2 separate residencies, the programs that we really felt that would benefit us the most in our training. And so we were about 3.5 hours apart, traveled every weekend, as many as weekends as possible when you're on call all the time, to see each other and, make sure we're staying in touch. And, that was a pretty hard time for us. When we were applying for fellowship, and it just so happened that we were both interested in gastroenterology, so we were applying, it was kind of more of an exciting time because we were kind of planning our lives together at the same time. And so we knew we wanted to be in the same area. So we applied all to the same programs initially. Luckily mm-hmm. for us, her program, she actually was able to sign a little bit early. And so mm-hmm. with that, I was able to kind of target where wanted to kind of prioritize what programs I would rank based on that. And we were lucky enough to end up in the same metro area. And we work, we live together, but our fellowships are about 1 hour apart total. So we just live in the middle and are able to commute. Sure, you know all the guidelines and all the treatment regimens and everything you need to do for the patient in that setting. But your internal medicine residency isn't the time for that. When you're choosing a fellowship or looking at gastroenterology as a fellowship, the things you really want to look for is that they're allowing a good amount of clinical and procedural exposure. So you want to ask, how many procedures on average they're doing? Do the fellows feel comfortable in their backup? So the attending that's kind of precepting them and there with them for the procedure. How much are they learning? And you want to make sure that they have access to quality rotations and things that you may not see a lot of depending on where you go in gastroenterology. So if you go to a transplant center, you want to make sure that, obviously that's a more academic setting. There's also more clinically focused or community focused gastroenterology fellowships. So if you're going to one of those, making sure that they have relationships with these transplant centers and making sure you're having interactions with transplant hepatology and, you know, IBD is really important in your practice, and knowing when it's time that you can take care of someone in a community setting or when it's time that you need to send them for evaluation at one of those centers.
Now, many years back, I don't know the exact amount, they changed the amount of work schedule that residents and fellows can work down to no more than 80 hours. How has that affected, mm-hmm. if at all? Can you give us any insights to your training?
Sure. So that actually has changed a couple times since I've been in training. Initially, you know, it's all geared to making sure that they're not kind of overworking the residents and the fellows. Not that they would want to overwork them. It's just that at a certain point, exhaustion sets in. And so the whole point of this is that you're learning and trying to, you know, having time to look something up and make sure you're doing the right thing and have that backup. And so I think that it's really made a big difference in our training. You know, initially, one of the thoughts of keeping kind of the longer hours was seeing this continuity. So when a patient comes in, from the moment they step in the door of the hospital, seeing them throughout their workup and kind of being them with them for 24, 36 hours was thought to be a better way to see a patient progression and kind of learn from that. The issue was that people were getting so exhausted that it just didn't seem as you weren't getting as much meaningful return from that and educationally. And so I think that from my standpoint, I've always been really happy with my training. I've always had a good amount of rest. Of course, you're mm-hmm. tired. Of course, that you know you're pushed to the limit. But that's also it's a challenge both. Fatigue-wise goes both physically and mentally. You know, you're fatigued because you want to do the best thing for the patient possible. And at each level of training, you're training to be the best physician you can be. And at that time, you're still having the responsibility to take care of the patient. And so with that, it kind of weighs on you mentally too. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're trying to take care of a patient and learn at the same time, you still need to go talk to the family and be confident and you know, talk to your seniors and know what the plan is when you might have just learned it the night before, right. You know? So those things take a toll on you. And I think that the hours restrictions both helped people kind of deal with stress and recoup physically, but also have time to kind of get, you know, get sleep and get rest and kind of reflect on experiences in the hospital and learn from them a little more substantially than they did before.
Yeah, okay. beyond sleep, mm-hmm. how's your work-life balance during fellowship?
During fellowship, you know, so fellowship is almost like starting residency all over again, you know, because, you know, you know internal medicine well. I've been trained very well, and I have a lot of people to thank for that. And so you go into the specialty, and suddenly at the time that you usually would talk to the specialist and say, you know, what would be your recommendations based on your experience in this, you know, specific situation, you're now the one people are turning to and asking. And so the work-life balance for me is pretty good. You know, they really do take care of us and make sure that our call schedules are spaced out. We have time, you know, for us specifically, we take home call. So it's not usually for internal medicine. We're in the hospital during our call. And so in gastroenterology, I can be home and take home call. I still have to come in and if anything is, you know, urgent or emergent and evaluate patients. But it gives you a little bit more of a little bit more flexibility in what you can do. You can be home for dinner. And then you can, you know, if you need to go in, you go in, when you're called. So I think I like that aspect a lot more. I think that, you know, along with that, I've learned throughout, you know, my initial training and residency, how to make sure you're taking care of yourself. And so you kind of adjust your schedule and, make sure that you're getting your workouts in and you're doing these things around that. And I feel like I've hit a really good balance after many years of training so that I can, do my best at work, but also feel good at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What things have surprised you about your GI fellowship that maybe you weren't aware of when you selected GI?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a couple different things, I guess. You know, medical, like the knowledge base is just changing so rapidly. I think, you know, it's probably across all specialties, but I, you know, recommendations change day by day almost, it seems. One thing that has surprised me so far is the amount that social media is kind of playing into the learning process now. And so you have the ability now to sign up on Twitter with, you know, leaders in the field, people that are doing research, they write the guidelines, and they will, you know, put a tweet out to update you on the most current thing they're looking at or the most current guideline. You have direct access to them too. So I was really surprised how small the community seems to get in the sense that, which is a great thing for patient care, it's a great thing for my learning, in the sense that you have direct access to people and people want to talk to you. People want to take care of people, even if they're not, that's not directly their patient. So you can always reach out to them either on Twitter. I mean, I've gotten emails, phone numbers at conferences, and you can just call, you know, during the day, say, you know, go over a case with them and they'll teach you over the phone. And so I was really surprised by that kind of level of camaraderie along this, among the specialty. And I think that kind of engaging in social media is really important to keep up with the most current things so that you're doing the best thing for the patients.
So it sounds like you have direct access, literally, if you choose to, some of the experts in your field and maybe some specialties of GI that otherwise you might not have without social media.
Exactly. And so, you know, before I think all of this was done, likely, you know, at conferences and things like that, where you'd meet people directly, which we still do. But this kind of gives another avenue that allows them to communicate kind of en masse to as many people as possible, which is, I think, is a great thing for all of us keeping up on the same page and kind of staying on the edge of the, you know, the knowledge curve.
What advice can you give our folks out there about choosing a specialty today?
I think that choosing a specialty, as I said, it's difficult initially. You know, I mean, you're training, you're learning, you're focusing on being the best doctor you can be initially, and so everything's interesting. And I think what I've found is that a lot of people end up melding with their specialty over time in most cases. And so, you know, finding a specialty that works with your interest, works with your personality, I think is really important. For me specifically, I really liked a lot of aspects of gastroenterology. I liked the procedural aspect. You know, I liked kind of not the medical portion, you know, part of it. And so those things together, really, once I started seeing the patients, it really cemented it for me. I thought that from my experience, gastroenterology, you have to have a good sense of humor. And you have to make people feel comfortable talking about something that they may not bring up at the dinner table. Definitely, I mean, I've had more than one person say, I'm so embarrassed to tell you about this. And I always tell them, you know, it's affecting your life in such a way that you've come to us for help. And so making people feel that they have a safe space, that they can just talk openly about things that they're embarrassed about, is really something I love about it, because I feel like it's having such an impact on their lives that they don't get to talk about it with anyone else. You know, you have people that have real, real ailments that inhibit them at work, that they don't even feel comfortable telling their boss, you know, that they have to leave because they have to go to the bathroom, you know? And so
it's like Crohn's disease.
Exactly.
Like that.
And so they're going through a lot. And I feel like a lot of times they don't feel that they can, often talked openly about it. And so giving them that space where they can feel comfortable is really important for me. And it's just one of those little things that by getting experience in the specialty and doing rotations, I realized that was a big drive for me. And I really liked all the aspects of it. It all just came together. So I think, you know, the main thing is experience and trying to schedule rotations and get that exposure to what you think you might be interested in. And talking to people, people will be very honest with you. That, you know, you talk to attending physicians, you talk to colleagues, you know, they've seen a lot of people in your shoes. And so when you're trying to choose, there's a lot of people will definitely tell you, they won't hold back telling you what they think they see you in, or they think you would fit best in. So take their advice, you know, and look into what other people tell you as well. And really just be truthful with yourself and make sure that you're making the decision that will best impact the patients the way that you would want to, you know, practice.
With GI, how often is food prescribed? You know what I mean? Like, you know, with Crohn's disease, I have a friend that has Crohn's mm-hmm. disease, and she has to stay away from cheese mm-hmm. and, you know, different types of food. Is it kind of a specialty where diet is very important?
Absolutely. So we work in close relationship with dietitians. And so we start people on the path. You know, there's things like for irritable bowel syndrome, things like that, you know, we'll initially advise people to, you know, take out dairy, see if that works. There's also a much more stringent diet called a low FODMAPs diet, which basically takes a lot of fermentable foods that can cause a lot of gas, bloating, discomfort. And it's an elimination diet. So it takes months to do correctly. And so sometimes people need a little bit more follow-up. And so we will work with a dietitian, have them meet with them as well, and kind of work as a team to make sure that we're not relying just on medications. We're not relying on one thing in particular. We want to make sure it's a team approach to a lot of these conditions mm-hmm. Give them the tools they need to get to the level that they want to get to regarding their symptoms.
What are the most common foods that you see that are causing issues?
It definitely depends on the issues, but you know, a lot of times dairy is one of the most common. And so dairy is one that we usually will trial people off of and see how they do depending on the condition. And then the low FODMAPs diet includes a lot of foods. It's a whole, at least a page of food. So usually that one, you know, there's plenty of examples on there, but I wouldn't, you know, it depends on the person, and that those types of diets are kind of personalized, and that's why it takes time to go through that. You eliminate the food, you see if you respond symptom wise, and if you don't respond, then you keep going along it. So it a lot of this is individualized, and we don't have, I don't have a lot of concrete evidence that I can give a patient that says, if you avoid this, this, and this, everything will be fine. So it does take work, and it takes a lot of follow-up and patience on both, you know, of course, on the patient's part and on our part to make sure that we're trying to get them controlled as best we can.
Mm-hmm. Are you or your fiance planning on doing additional training after your initial 3-year fellowship?
I think we're still considering at this point. You know, doing additional training is definitely putting more, you know, tools in your toolbox to treat patients. And it also, I think, you have to remember that it also changes your patient population. So if you're doing advanced procedures, you're going to have a different patient population than a general gastroenterologist. And so you want to make sure, again, as anything, that the patients are kind of at the center of what you do. So you want to make sure that those patients are the ones that you will help the most and you'll have the most impact on. And I think for us, you know, we have a lot of different interests at this point. And so we really haven't narrowed it down. And so I think both of us are still kind of deciding whether we want to pursue that or not, but it's something we're strongly considering. And I really haven't even narrowed it down from IBD, because there's IBD, there's hepatology, and then there's advanced endoscopy at minimum. So there's a lot of different options.
Mm-hmm. What's the most interesting case you've had so far?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of interesting cases. Of course, the ones that always get all the fellows talking are foreign bodies. So things swallowed. You know, we've had dental files swallowed that are sharp. And, you know, every time you see that on an x-ray, everyone gets talking. You've had, you know, it's more of it's something that, you know, you always remember, because you're always concerned to go get it. There's always complications that can occur when you're trying to obtain that sharp object. And one thing that I didn't realize before I got into gastroenterology was how common food impactions are. So a lot of people have conditions of the esophagus that cause them to get food stuck. And so when that gets stuck, it's actually one of our emergencies because you can't let it sit there for too long. And people can have breathing issues with it or develop ulcers and other complications if it's left too long. So these people come in, patients come in, they're in a lot of discomfort. You come to the emergency room, you see them, you take out the food. Sometimes it takes, 3 minutes. Sometimes it takes over an hour. And you just have to go be real methodical and work. And once you get it out, they usually go home that night. And so, or, that day, same day. So it's one of the things that I didn't realize because you don't see them get admitted. And so when I was a little bit surprised on how often that occurs and how many people are afflicted with that. And so we've had a lot of good cases of that as well. And, those are the main ones that are the most interesting to me, just because you get to help people and it's usually hopefully a quick fix for them.
Yeah.
If you had to do it over again, would you have selected GI as your fellowship?
110%. I think that I really love this specialty. I did have my first rotation in GI when I was a third year medical student, and it stuck with me since then. And I really feel that it's giving me the tools that I need to make the biggest difference I can in someone's life. And so everything I've gone through up until this point has been absolutely worth it. And I'm really happy with my choice.
Excellent. And what can you tell us about your all's decision to choose a location? Mm-hmm. I know it's a little bit of time out. Sure. When are you and your fiance going to go into that decision?
So, that decision is, it's probably one of, it's definitely a difficult decision because, there's so many different aspects to consider. We have family across the country, and so we do want to be near family. And at the same time, we want a good area to live in, of course. And it's something that I realize is that you get, the U.S. is huge, and so there's so many areas that I probably am not even familiar with, that would be a great fit for us. And she feels the same way. And so, kind of doing our research is what we're starting right now. She'd like to go somewhere warm. I'm not sure if Texas is too warm, though. And so we're every time we go somewhere to visit friends, visit family, we're always looking around, thinking about if this area is a good fit for us. We want to be in an area where we can comfortably practice together, whether that be in the same practice or different practices. We always, she's my greatest ally, and I learn a lot from her. We learn a lot from each other. And so we always really the one thing that you're not exposed to when you're training on all of this is you don't get a lot of the business training. You don't get a lot of how to set up a practice or how to become part of a practice. You don't have a lot of experience that in all. And so it's one of the things that you have to really talk to family, talk to your attendings, and make sure you're talking to everyone you can about what makes a good practice so that you can kind of figure out, just as you figured out how to get into your specialty, to figure out kind of what practice will work best for you and make sure that it gives you the skills you need to take care of everyone the best. So I have, but that being said, I gave you a big roundabout answer. I do not know where we want to go yet. We are looking, and we are definitely open and excited to be looking for a place to start our lives together.
Yeah. And that's what I love. I do marketing mm-hmm. here, but working alongside the recruiters and seeing them work with doctors, mm-hmm. I love seeing, we try not to just sell a location, mm-hmm. We try to get to know the doctor and then supply them with all these different options. And it's really cool when, you have a doctor that, and we have a story of a doctor that was in California, and I think he went to Wyoming and just in the boondocks, mm-hmm. and it changed his mm-hmm. life. Just cool stories that, this doctor probably would never have gone there and, took a chance and, you know, completely changed his life. Are you open to doing rural if that
Absolutely. You know, I actually did my third and fourth year training as a medical student in a town of about, initially about 8,000 people. So pretty small town, had the, you know, the welcome center for the state at the state line. And I really liked being in a small town. So I'm very open to that. And I think, you know, it's amazing how much is out there. That you're so focused on your training and becoming the best doctor you can be that you don't really think about it, how many opportunities are out there. And so, yeah, I think it's really great that you guys, help us kind of get that perspective and help us figure out what would be a good fit for us and where we can go.
Yeah. Well, we're already out of time. Thank you so much for letting us pick your brain and talk with you today.
Well, thank you for having me.
What's your rest of your day like?
Well, luckily for me, I am done for the day for once. But I will, as I usually do, work is never done. So I'll usually be studying this evening and making sure we're getting ready. We do have interviews tomorrow for the new fellow. So I'm excited to meet the applicants and kind of go on that journey. So.
Cool. Well, we're excited to maybe circle back with you when you guys decide where you go and, after fellowship. Cool. Well, thank you so much. And we hope you have a great rest of
your day.
Thank you
as well.
Thank you to all our listeners. If you'd like to be notified when new episodes air, make sure to hit that subscribe button. And thank you to Pacific Companies. Without you guys, this podcast would not be possible. If you'd like to be a guest or for more information, go to www.pacificcompanies.com.